Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it is the Third Man In Radio. Chris Block here, writer, editor, keeper, and thethirdmanin.com. It is the Third Man In Radio, top of the clock here, 8 o'clock in Chicago on this Tuesday night, October the 12th, 2010. Superstar, are you there?
I am here.
Fantastic. How are you doing today?
Good. A little late arrival, but just in the nick of time.
We got a lot to talk about tonight on the show. Obviously, first week of the NHL, a lot has happened. I don't know. It's crazy how much stuff has gone on this first week of the season. It's not even a week old yet, you know, 5 or 6 days. The New Jersey Devils already are skating with 15 guys in a game. James Wisniewski's lewd gesture to Sean Avery gets him a 2-game suspension. Of course, Jalmerson last night, reckless hit on Jason Pominville. 2-game suspension came down today, but a lot of other things. Kirk Maltby retires today. Darcy Tucker retired not too long ago. Joe Thornton and Henrik Sedin are captains. Mike Ribeiro arrested for public intoxication. A potential Lady Bing perennial candidate, Pavel Datsyuk, drops the gloves on opening night and gets himself a Gordie Howe hat trick. That was pretty interesting. Derek Steppen becomes the fourth NHL player in history to record a hat trick in his first career game. Two guys off the 2011 UFA market, Zdeno Chara, the best defenseman in that potential crop, he's gone. Boston re-upping with him and Patrice Bergeron, and of course Andre Pavlich collapses during Atlanta's home opener and season opener on Friday night. No one seems to know why, and I don't sense any. Any glaring concern over something that we should be concerned about. But, so a lot of that we'll talk about. But tonight, we do have a guest on the line, Blackhawks and Nashville Predators, tomorrow night, Wednesday night at the United Center. First matchup of the year between two teams that met in last year's Western Conference quarterfinal opening round. From PredsOnTheGlass.com, it is Buddy Oaks. How are you doing tonight, Buddy?
Doing great, Chris. How are you?
Pretty good. I think first of all, you've been on the internet for a while. I mean, I've seen your work and a bunch of different places, particularly on the website there. And also, you have your own show here on Blog Talk Radio that people can check out, blogtalkradio.com/PredsOnTheGlass. Maybe get us up to speed, give us a little background of how you became, started writing about the Predators online and what got you into it.
Well, several years ago when there was so much discussion here about the Preds leaving town and everybody's favorite Jim Bosselli coming in here and trying to take the team and run away with it and everything, the fan interest had not been really high in the years before that, and there were actually very few blogs in Nashville. There was probably two or three active blogs at that time, and one of the things, looking around the internet, you got all the different websites that are supposed to have 30 different correspondents and things like that, and there was never anything under the Predators. So I had started writing back, I guess, 4 seasons ago, contributing to some different sites and trying to get a little bit more Preds talk out there. From that, I went to writing with Hockey Primetime, Sammy Wu, doing a lot of Preds stuff there. And then the next year, my son is homeschooled, and he and I started working together on putting together a site, and that's how Preds on the Glass got started. This is our third full season doing that, and also started our third season on Blog Talk Radio doing a show on Monday nights at 7. Kind of came in the back door, started out as blogging and going into the season 3 years ago. I guess it was 2008-2009 season, a longtime friend of mine, Marion Wilhoit, the editor of the Columbia Daily Herald, got wind of what we were doing and asked if I would like to do some covering of the Preds for the local paper, the Daily Herald. And I said, sure. So I kind of snuck in the back door, got credentialed through the Herald, and did that for the rest of 2008, 2009. Last year, the Predators went ahead and credentialed me as Preds on the Glass as opposed to coming through the newspaper. And there was only one other blog that was regularly credentialed at the Predators games. That was Brandon Felder, who wrote for Hockey Buzz, still does. This year they have expanded greatly the credentialing process, let a lot of people in the press box from blogs. They have what they call Bloggers Row. It's one row that has about 10 seats crammed in there. On opening night, at least, there was that many. And I had a little spillover beyond that. So the Predators have been very friendly to bloggers and to especially to us, letting us in last year and the year before. And they have not had very good coverage in the local press, either on TV or in the newspaper. The newspaper had been horrible. This year they did hire a young guy, about 27, 28 years old, named Josh Cooper, who is very Internet-friendly, Twitter-friendly, knows how to get the job done. And he's completely turned around what the local paper, the Tennessean, is doing. So we're getting better coverage out of them. It used to be us pushing the Tennessean. Now the Tennessean is pushing the bloggers. So it's worked out pretty well, and Fred's got more coverage than they've ever had in their 12-year history.
Of course, so you're there on Saturday night. Nashville opens up the season, and it's going to be the only game that the Predators play before tomorrow night's matchup with the Blackhawks. Predators get started with a very impressive victory against the Anaheim Ducks, 4-1 in front of a sellout crowd there at Bridgestone Arena, is what they're calling it now anyway. what are your impressions coming out of that game? Some new faces, but overall, like, what's the feeling coming out of that game, coming into tomorrow night? Where are the Predators at right now? I mean, what's the feeling, the mood about this team right now?
I think the mood is probably really good, especially considering the fact that Pekka Rinne went down early in the third period there, and it probably couldn't have worked out any better that rookie Anders Lineback was able to come into the game then. Spent the whole day thinking he was just going to be sitting on the bench and having a pretty good seat and watching Pekka do his thing, and then Pekka fell on, and he stayed in for one face-off and made one save, and waved at the bench and said he was done. It doesn't seem like it's a serious injury. Barry Trotz, after the game, stated emphatically that it wasn't serious. It was something that was just day-to-day. Apparently his knees, officially his lower body, but from what I understand, his knees kind of got bent back a little bit, and he's probably just got a little strain. And this early in the season, they're not going to take any chances. Lindbeck came in and played 17 minutes, stopped all seven shots from a very incredibly weak Anaheim Ducks team, and got his feet wet and was just absolutely thrilled to death after the game. His parents were here from Sweden. They came in to help him get settled into his apartment and everything, so they were actually on hand. They never had any idea they would get to see him play because he probably wasn't scheduled to play until the Predators had back-to-back in a couple of weeks on a weekend on a road trip. Pekka was probably set to play tomorrow and Thursday, and then through the games on into next week. But it was really interesting talking to the players after the game to a man. Every one of them said that they had full confidence in Lindback and that they weren't going to change their game or anything else with him in there. The fact is, tomorrow night what you'll see is you'll see a full 18-man effort in front of him to all play defense, to play the Predators way, basically, with defense first. Probably see a 2-1, 3-2 type game, something like that, I would imagine, unless things completely fall apart, which I don't really expect. As far as overall, how the Predators have reacted, the last year's Game 5 that y'all loved so well, I'm sure, up there, is really the thing that brought this team together. I was surprised when the game came back here for Game 6 that Monday that the team was actually ready to play after such a devastating loss on Saturday. And the team is a very close team. They do play as a unit, and they were able to put that behind them. Several things did kind of go wrong at the start of Game 6, some weird bounces, pucks going in net, stuff like that. It was kind of, by that point, it was kind of obvious that y'all were moving on and that we were going home. But
yeah, that was a crazy first period. I mean, all the scoring happened in the first period of that game.
Yeah, and but they never really gave up that game. They played a good 60-minute game, but it was really too late at that point, and Chicago had tasted blood and was going for the kill. So, but that really galvanized the team. In the preseason this year, talking to all the players, looking back, they all said that they realized they were close, and if had they held on that one game and come back here with a 3-2 lead, things could have been different. So they got enough of a taste of it to know that this is the year that they're going to move on from the first round and go further to the second round or even further than that possibly. And talking to Barry Trotz and during the summer, I mean, he, you know, said that in his entire career he's never felt anything quite like the end of Game 5, and most of the Fred fans feel the same way. So building on that, this is the year. I mean, everything is coming together for them. They had a real good preseason. They won 3 in a row after they sorted out who was actually going to be with the team. Played a had a real good win in Washington on the Sunday before opening night. 3-0 shutout for Pekka, and Washington was playing without a couple of their players, but it was a pretty complete victory. And then Saturday, same thing against Anaheim. It was a really good win. Looking back in the rearview mirror, it's not really a coincidence that Anaheim has just completely fallen apart. Their defense is horrible. So looking at it that way, it probably wasn't as big a win as we thought it was leaving the arena on Saturday night. But still, a win is a win, and for opening nights, that's probably the most successful one that they've had in the franchise history.
So we should note, you know, going in, let's look ahead for this week for the Nashville Predators and kind of take a look at why, you know, the Predators, I mean, this game tomorrow night is very important for the Predators. They go home on Thursday night to meet the St. Louis Blues. It's expected, I believe, that Pecorino could possibly play that game. Is that correct?
Nobody's really saying. I would think that he would. Kind of think they want to give him an extra day and see how he responds to whatever it is he's got going. It's a long season, and they, you know, they're not going to force anything. They have to turn around and play the Caps again on Saturday night, and then Calgary's here on Tuesday, and then Pittsburgh's here the following Thursday. So they've got plenty of top teams to play here in the next 10 days or so, and they're not going to worry about the whole season right now and getting Pekka in there. I think they have enough confidence in Lindback to let him go back-to-back if necessary. And Mark Dekanich has been kind of the goalie in waiting now for a couple of years and didn't have a great season last year, but had a couple of good games so far in Milwaukee this year. So, I mean, in a pinch, they could put him in.
Before I do want to talk about the Nashville's goalies in just a second, but before we go on, so we know to our listeners and everybody listening tonight, and whenever they do tomorrow, Nashville's going to be without some key players tomorrow night, and number one being Martin Erat, aside from Pecorino. Martin Erat's not coming back, spasms, didn't make the trip to Chicago tonight. Jamie Lundmark, who's a name that just literally won't go away. I mean, he was in the minors, lingering in the minors years ago, and then he caught back on with Calgary, and now he's still around. And then Sergei Kostitsyn, who broke his toe in exhibition, and I want to get to him in a second, too. But let's continue on with the goalies. That it seems, you know, that going into the you know, training camp in the preseason, that was the biggest, at least nationally anyway, that was the biggest storyline going into Predators camp was, okay, Pecorino, solid number one. definitely, you know, he's the guy in Nashville, but something goes wrong, who's the guy? And, you know, and one of the interesting things about Nashville is they've always seemed to have a guy in waiting. You know, I mean, I don't know how good Dan Ellis is. We'll probably figure that out. But, you know, you talk about you had Thomas Vokoun before. Pecorine comes up. You know, is there a guy right now in Nashville, whether it's Lindback, whether, you know, whomever, is there a guy that is, you know, a thought of as, you know, he is the incumbent potentially when Rene's contract runs out in 3 years and perhaps, like Predators goalies before him, he moves along? What's the state of Predators goaltending right now?
Well, I think when 2 years ago when they drafted Chet Pickard in the first round, they had two first-round picks that year, and they got Colin Wilson and picked up Chet Pickard somewhere, I think, around 18th or something like that. I think it was probably thought then that he would be the one that would take over after Pekka. And then things have really gotten confusing in that area with Anders Lindback, who is kind of the way he's built, almost a clone of Pekka. He's 6'6", Pekka's 6'5". They're the two tallest goalies in the league. And he is really come along, and he's learned fast just from over the summer when they had the development camp, and there was a lot of talk of whether or not the Preds would pick up another goalie. And, you know, they were saying Lindback looked the best at development camp, and he didn't look anywhere near ready. But just in the couple of months since then, when the rookie camp came, he looked pretty good. And when camp opened up, he seemed to be getting better, but still there was a lot of concern at that point that he was going to be ready. But the difference between seeing him and some of the scrimmages 2 weeks before the season started and the way he played Saturday night was almost night and day. He's been working with Mitch Korn and also with Pekka, because they're both from they both have real similar styles. They both speak the language. They, Peck has been kind of a mentor to him, and it's incredible with all the one-on-one time that he's had that they've been able to do, you know, what he's been able to accomplish in a short period of time. If you watch him in net, he has really good positioning, really good lateral movement. His weakness is probably his glove, which is interesting because that's probably one of Pekka's strengths, and I think Pekka probably has been working with him along with Mitch Korn, and is really going to help him out in that area. So it'll be interesting to see. Chet Pickard is at Milwaukee. He's basically number two. He had kind of a rough outing on Sunday. They pulled him and put Mark Dekanich back in. So he's just not real consistent, and he's still – at least a year or two away from being able to make the job. And they've also got Jeremy Smith, who was highly thought of, drafted the year before Pickard. He has started the year again in Cincinnati in the East Coast League, and where he got co-most valuable player last year in the Kelly Cup Finals. But, you know, it's a long way from the East Coast League to Nashville, especially when you've got the number of goalies between here and there. One of the big tests that passed today was in what the Predators thought about Pekka's injury and their confidence in what they had was Thomas Greiss was on waivers, and the Predators could have picked him up and didn't. So that was kind of encouraging that they weren't worried and they were confident in Pekka's ability to return and what they had in Lindback and Dekanich for the rest of the year. So that's kind of how it all lines up right now. I mean, you've got Pekka and then Lindback. Dekanich is, you know, he's not going to be a star, but, you know, he can fill the role if needed. Pickard, with time, I think, will grow into the goalie they hope he'll be. They've got a couple other guys playing in Europe this year that they simply don't have room to bring over here. So it's they're known for goalies and defense, and that's kind of the Predator way.
So obviously, you know, and not going out and picking up Greiss today, that there is no concern about the knee, and there's a little bit of belief that Lindback can give them, you know, say say Renee misses a week here and there, Lindback, there's enough confidence in him right now that he can give you a week, five out of seven games if he has to, and keep the Predators in games and give them a chance to win? Is I guess that would be the belief as of now?
Yeah, I think so. I think that they will probably clamp down a little bit, and probably the defense will be laying back a little bit more tomorrow. They won't be quite jumping in as much as they might be otherwise on the rush and things like that. But I think they will probably do a pretty good job of protecting Lindback. I think with Shane O'Brien in there, one thing you'll see this year is that he is going to be dropping back and probably protecting the goalie a little bit better. I mean, that's how Pekka got injured the other night, was when Bodie was running Pekka on a rush, and he and Bouillon got tied up and they all fell on each other. And I think you're going to see more protection around the net than we've seen in the past.
You talk about Shane O'Brien coming in. Of course, Ryan Parent sent over to the Vancouver Canucks for Shane O'Brien. Gives it the Predators some much needed muscle on that back line. Your early impressions of that trade and Shane O'Brien, a controversial figure in Vancouver, whether it's because it's just Vancouver and they need something to talk about 24/7 about the Canucks in Vancouver. What's the early returns on this guy? What's the mood of the team bringing in a guy like O'Brien?
I think everybody's pretty pumped up about it. Ryan Parent was a product of the Predators organization and went over to Philadelphia and played there. Never really played a full season. Was fairly soft on defense. Didn't really like to mix it up, and was fairly injury prone. And you saw last year during Philadelphia's postseason run, he didn't really play a whole lot. The games that he did play, he wasn't getting a lot of minutes. And the Central Division is a whole lot tougher than the Eastern Conference. I would say it's probably the toughest division in hockey. And all the teams in it are tough teams. We'll mix it up. And you need some people that are willing to play tough on the blue line. And Ryan Parent wasn't that. And I think what we got was a guy that was willing to play hard, go to the corners, mix it up around the net, and as opposed to someone that wasn't. And when the trade first happened, I thought it was a really good signal to me that the team was going out and planning on playing into the postseason and not just worrying about what was going to happen between now and the second week in April. And I wrote that, and then later that day, Barry Trotz came out and said that the trade may not make sense for Saturday night, but it's going to make sense next May and June. So that was pretty much their intent when they did that, was to get somebody that had playoff experience and was going to play a little grittier game than what they had. The other part of the trade was they had Jonas Anderson, who was on a one-way contract, and they managed to move him off the roster too, and at the same time. So in moving Parent and Anderson, it was pretty much an even swap money-wise to bring O'Brien in. So that was a pretty good deal for him. The initial reaction, I think, among fans where they were kind of startled, they didn't like it. And then I think by the time game rolled around on Saturday night, most people were pretty far into it.
You know, speaking about O'Brien, and you know, he was sort of, you know, if you believe the reports, he was kind of disruptive, a guy that was late to practice, kind of a little bit of a distraction in Vancouver for whatever reason. It's definitely a new place, new situation for him in Nashville. Who's the leader in that room? Obviously, Shea Weber named captain, but is there a guy besides Shane Weber that is the leader in that room that will sort of be the guy to kind of, you know, even forgetting Shane O'Brien, but keep everybody in line in that room?
Shea is definitely the man. They when they move O'Brien into the locker room, they put their lockers side by side so that Shea can kind of work with him and keep him on the reservation, I guess. And you've got Ryan Suter too, is another young player who is really matured. I think last year's Olympic experience and getting to go be a stud for Team USA really kind of took him to another level. You also have Steve Sullivan. He's been around forever. Y'all had him for a while. He's a great guy in the locker room, very intense player. You know, people like that. Frankie Bouillon is much quieter than the rest of them, but it's really funny. I mean, the guy came alive Saturday night and ended up in a fight and with Bodie, who's like 7 or 8 inches taller than he is early in the game, and then was mixing it up several other times during the game. And I talked to him after the game, and I said, what's the deal here? I mean, last year, you know, we didn't see anything like this. And he said, well, this is his game. He said last year he just tried to fit in and not get injured and play the Predator away. But that the coaches had talked to him and said that, you know, you're going to have to play the older, grittier game that he was used to playing because they weren't just trying to make the playoffs this year. They needed, you know, something to take them deep into the playoffs. And so you see him stepping up this year, too. I mean, it's something we didn't see last year. If you look back in Montreal, even back in juniors, he did have a few more fights. He was a grittier player. And now that he's got the comfort of a two-year contract, he's stepping up and playing the role that they want him to play.
You talk about the Predator way, and, you know, we talk about, you know, new players in that room that maybe are coming in with an idea that this is a second chance, and a guy that definitely falls into that category is Sergei Kostitsyn. Brought you know, to Nashville to hopefully provide a little extra punch, a little extra scoring. Nashville would seem to be the perfect place for Sergei. I mean, you know, you've got the Bloggers Row there, and you've got some, you know, you've got some beat writers and stuff, but it's not Montreal, it's not New York, it's not Toronto, it's not even Chicago. I mean, Sergei's out. He won't be in the lineup tomorrow night, but which is crucial, being that you're also missing Martin Erat. But I mean, is this the place where Sergei can kind of regain his mojo? I mean, who in preseason? Let's start here. In preseason, who was he playing with, and how did he look?
In the preseason, you go to the practice rink and watch him, and he's one of those guys that's a very smooth skater, and you know, like a lot of Russians, it doesn't really look like he's trying, but he seemed to be getting to the right places at the right time, and. You know, and then the first game we actually saw him in, he was like a new man. I mean, he came alive out on the ice in the game competition. It was pretty strange because Barry Trotz never really seemed concerned that he didn't look like he was hustling or didn't look to be trying that hard. You know, when they signed him and he came in, I kind of expected, you know, that with his minimum wage contract out there that he would be, you know, out there busting his butt trying to, you know, impress everybody and doing everything else, but he was just kind of doing his own thing. And, you know, it was somewhat concerning. But then after seeing him in the games and seeing the fact that, you know, he could blend in and play well along with some other players, there was a little bit less concern. He's kind of an odd guy. And, you know, I don't know whether it's a language problem or not, or whether it's just kind of the way he is. The first day that we had practice, the first day of scrimmages when camp opened, I asked the Predator PR guy, I said, you know, how's his English? And he said, well, you know, he hadn't really talked to anybody. So we went in there. There was me and Amanda DiPaolo, another blogger. We were the first ones to talk to him. And, you know, it's just like pulling teeth trying to get something out of him. I think he's been so burned by writers and everything in other places. I'm going to ask him, you know, what's different here than in Montreal? And he said, well, you know, after every practice, he had 40 people pushing around him. And here, you know, it's just, you know, you two. And so that was a little different for him. And then after the first home game we played, the first goal was he deflected a Shea Weber shot into the net. It was just an absolutely incredible play. And some other guys were talking to him after it was over with and, you know, asking about the shot from Shea. And he's, you know, going, who, you know, like this, and not really really sure who he's even talking about. And, you know, they finally say Webby, and he understands that. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens as the year goes on. I mean, he's definitely got the talent. And, you know, it's something that's going to have to come from within him that, you know, where he decides that he's ready to play and not going to worry about the media or anybody else and just play his game because he's definitely got skill. So, you know, it's just it's kind of an odd situation to even really judge what he's doing or what he's thinking simply because he's kind of non-communicative with, at least he has been around me so far and some other people I've talked to. So it's kind of wait and see. But, I mean, it was a no-risk contract for the Predators, basically. And he, you know, somebody's going to go down and he's going to get over his foot ailment and then, you know, he's going to play and we'll see what happens.
Now, with Kostitsyn as well, it seems like, from what I read today, that these guys are all kind of on track and they'll be back in a game or two. Is that correct with him, both Kostitsyn and Erat as well?
Yeah, Erat is, you know, his back has been sore, I guess, for a while during camp and everything. And I think they're just taking the approach that this is the time to rest. I mean, when there's only 3 games a week as opposed to playing every other night that you'll get into further into the season. And they're just kind of taking it easy with him. Saturday, he was pretty invisible on the ice. And he wasn't really involved in anything, wasn't really doing anything that you would notice. So it must have really been bothering him then. And I think they're just, you know, letting him rest a few days to see what happens. Kostitsyn, I don't know. There's no real timetable since he hasn't been dependent upon to be in the top 4 lines. There hadn't been a whole lot of discussion about it. But unless something changes and they call somebody up tomorrow, I guess Wade Bielak will be taking Marty Erat's place, making his annual debut for the Predators.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. With Milwaukee just up the road here, they could call someone down, you know, 2 hours before the game, so you never know. But I think that from a Blackhawk fan's perspective, there's some interest in seeing finally at some point. We saw it a couple of times during the preseason, but big 6'8" John Scott, who many of us don't really understand why he's on this team, kind of waiting for his first, you know, making his physical presence known. And if Wade Bielak's in the lineup, you know, Bielak would have willing partners probably with Nick Boynton and John Scott, and to a lesser extent, Jake Dowell. And it wouldn't be a good thing for Jake Dowell to take on Wade Bielak. But in keeping for just a few minutes longer with this, you know, the focus on the chemistry of the Nashville Predators, and I was very interested to know this, and another guy that was lost over the summer, traded away, Jason Arnott. Jason Arnott is a guy historically who's been an underachiever. There was high expectations, you know, coming out of his draft year that this was a guy, Jason Arnott, that was, you know, in Edmonton that was going to be looked upon as, you know, sort of the next Eric Lindros or the next Mark Messier. Those were the kind of expectations that were there for Jason Arnott since the beginning of his career. Never really truly realized them, but in seasons in New Jersey and Dallas, he really found his way, and he on a great team, he's an excellent number two, and that's where he's had the most success. I noticed, and I've heard over the summer and since the trade, that there hasn't been much displeasure in Nashville over Jason Arnott's exit. Maybe can you explain that a little bit? You know, Jason Arnott, a veteran guy, a big guy who's got a bit of a physical presence, score some goals. He was probably your best player in Game 6. At least he scored the goals in Game 6 against the Blackhawks. Kind of discuss why Jason Arnott's no longer a Predator and maybe go through that a bit.
When he first came here, he, you know, it was thought to be a big signing, was playing on the first line at center position, and you know, that's really, really a little bit above what he's capable of doing. I mean, this year in New Jersey, he's playing up there and has played better, I think, what I have seen him play during the preseason and with the season opening up. And, you know, being on the second line, possibly third line, he's not getting the number one defensive pairing against him. He's not getting quite as much focus on him. And he's able to do a little bit more. In Nashville, he was named captain of the Predators, and it was really strange. Last year, at the end of the year, after Game 6, the next day, they had a press conference for kind of a wind-down thing, and Barry Trotz had been on the NHL Live show the day before and had gotten into a really weird discussion on there about Jason Arnott being uncomfortable being captain, but didn't go into a lot of detail. So then the next day at the press conference, I asked him, I said, you know, yesterday you're talking about him being uncomfortable and everything, and then Barry just opened up and for about 5 minutes talked about, you know, how he came in here and it wasn't something he really wanted to do, and they asked him to do it, and he stepped up and did it, and on and on and on, and he started talking about other captains and other teams that were uncomfortable and all this other type of stuff, and he really didn't have any idea, you know, why this was going or what he was talking about. You know, most people thought that meant this year that they probably were going to move Shea Weber into being the captain and that Arnott was going to step down on his own or something like that. No one had any idea at the time that the Predators had been talking to Arnott even back during the Olympic break about what he wanted to do with his career, if he would be agreeable to a trade at that point. Apparently he gave him a list of two or three teams, and New Jersey being the one place where he really wanted to go back to. We didn't know that at the end of the year. A couple of weeks later, or actually a couple of months later, getting ready to go to the award show, sitting in the airport, and got a text that they just traded Arnott. I was totally astounded. I couldn't believe anybody would take his salary. I mean, he's making $4.5 million or salary cap hit of $4.5 million or something this year. And, I mean, he had definitely worn out his welcome in Nashville. You know, he's a big guy. You know, excuses have been made that he looks slow because he's big and he's not real agile and this type of stuff. But the bottom line is that, you know, he didn't hustle onto the ice. He doesn't hustle off the ice. There's times when he's standing around. The Predators power play has had trouble for years, and a lot of it has been that he, on the power play, would stand around and have no movement. And, you know, the fans picked up on it. You know, the coaches wouldn't, you know, really mention it. But, you know, stuff like that, people just – I mean, he really got a bad rap from the fans. And a lot of it was deserved because he just, you know, he seemed to whine, be slow, you know, not really into the game at times. And, you know, I think some of it was due to physical injuries at times. He's had a history of concussions over the last few years. His wife, 2 years ago, when he had a fairly significant concussion, his wife wanted him to quit hockey at the time. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, from the home life that you know, you could bring to the rink if, you know, your wife's not happy you're going to the rink every day. So, you know, there's a lot of things like that. You know, I'm real happy for him that he's in New Jersey right now and that he's kind of got a fresh start with an organization he's had success with in the past. But, you know, it was just one of those things that it was time for him to move on, and he did.
Again, we're talking to Buddy Oakes, PredsOnTheGlass.com, and you can also catch him at you know, his show here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/PredsOnTheGlass. I want to get into, you know, noticing in the game the other night, I didn't see all of the game, but noticing what I was able to catch up on tape. Obviously, I was at the United Center. But the lines that Barry Trotz is going to bring in tomorrow night, there will be a little bit of an adjustment here without Erat. But Colin Wilson, Matt Lombardi is the center on that line with Erat. Not really sure. We'll have to see what he does, what Barry Trotz does with that line tomorrow night. But you also got Cal O'Reilly between Steve Sullivan and Patrick Hornquist, Marcel Gotch between J.P. Dumont and Jordan Tutu, and David Legwand between Joel Ward and Jared Smithson. Wade Bielak would be the extra forward, and who, if they decide to bring up somebody from Milwaukee tomorrow. The defensive pairings, Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, we all know about those two, Shane O'Brien and Cody Franson, and Francis Bouillon and Kevin Kline. The only extra player that the Predators are carrying right now are Alexander Sulzer, excuse me. The guy that was basically brought in to replace Jason Arnott on the roster, Matt Lombardi. And I find this very one of the things that I've been most fascinated about with the Predators for their entire existence is the fact that they've been able to maintain a competitive team, whether they made the playoffs or not. They've been competitive basically by using a system of sort of strength in numbers or strength and balance, really. In that market, Nashville, there's not a whole ton of corporate sponsorship. Good crowds, but not always sell out crowds. So they basically have an internal budget like a lot of small market teams do. But they've managed to do the best that they possibly can, to a certain extent with that. But with what comes with that is that they seem to always have a guy that, like Jason Arnott, that should be a second line center playing the role of first line center on the Nashville Predators Hockey Club. This year it's Matt Lombardi. Matt Lombardi's got, crazy wheels. I mean, one of the fastest forwards in the NHL, has some skills, can score some goals. On that top line, I think Colin Wilson's a fantastic player. I've been a big fan of him since BU. He's a clutch kid. He's going to score you a lot of clutch goals. And, remains to be seen what he becomes in the NHL, but I think he does have those attributes. What do you like from what you've seen of Matt Lombardi so far, and will he be able to handle that role of being a first line center and taking on those first line checking assignments from the other team?
You ran through the lines and that was the lines you gave out were where they were part of the game. That wasn't how the game started. Very Trotz will mix and match throughout the game. I mean, it's last year we had no idea. You thought the Arnott line was supposed to be the first line, but then you'd have, more skilled players on a different line. And it's kind of the same way right now. I think more of what Lombardi replaced was Arnott's salary. I mean, they got rid of Arnott, picked up Lombardi, saved $1 million. And he is going to take one of the center positions. I think eventually the person that will be the big man, the first line center, will be Colin Wilson. They've got him on the wing right now to give him a little more flexibility at scoring, and just to become more comfortable in the role. But I think he's the one that's going to end up there. I think before the contract's over, Lombardi will probably be basically the second line center, and that's probably where he's more comfortable. The Predators have really three fairly balanced scoring lines. The fourth line, the way it started the game the other night was Tutu and Smithson and Gotch, and then they got on the special teams and things got out of whack, and the lines kind of went in a different direction. And you see a lot of the leg one line being out there against the top forwards on the other team also. So it's just kind of the Predator way. The way they do things. Barry Trotz last year at one point he was talking about that, the core of the team. And, most coaches will talk about the team core. They're talking about maybe the top two defensemen. They're talking about, four forwards, something like that, the top goalie, seven or eight people are what they consider the core. And, Barry Trotz doesn't see it that way at all. He says the core of the team is like the top 26 people in your organization. And, it's kind of a mix and match type deal. If, if you lose a second line winger, then generally you aren't going to go, pull somebody else up off of another line if they're not capable. You're going to go down to Milwaukee and, pull up a top winger down there and insert him into the second line. One thing that I'm kind of wondering if they would do tomorrow night, with Chicago being as close to Milwaukee as it is Linus Klassen, who is a European guy that, if you go on YouTube, look him up, he's got some incredible moves and shots and everything else that he did over there. This year he got hurt in the first rookie game in Florida when somebody blindsided him, knocked him out. He was concussed, and he's just been back skating now for about 10 days. But he started off with 2 goals opening night in Milwaukee. And, you know, I don't know whether they would do something like that this early in the season or whether just to be light in there and be lacking there and, you know, go with it and see what happens. But the other night in the locker room, you know, when Pekka went down, Steve Sullivan saying, you know, that to get to the playoffs, it's going to take 29, 30, 31 people. And that's the team. He says right now some of the team is in Nashville. The rest of the team's in Milwaukee. So, you know, even though they're not all here in the locker room on the ice at practice every day, they have a very wide view of the team. And, you know, with not being as skilled as a lot of other teams, the way they have to play is every night. They have to have all 18 skaters and a goalie, or even the other night, a second goalie, come in and give 100% in order for them to win. And you hear a lot of talk about the Predator way, and that's kind of the root of it. Everybody has to pull together and give it every night.
That's from a team perspective. But from a fan perspective, and I think interest in that team and excitement about that team, of course team success is ultimately the main thing. But as far as people getting excited about that team, is there a thirst in that market for a true superstar? A guy that sells tickets, a guy that, just generates excitement. I mean, we could go through the names, Ovechkin, Kovalchuk, Taser, Cam. I mean, we can go through all those names. But, I mean, is there – I mean, it's really something that's been lacking in Nashville pretty much for the entirety. I mean, is that something that you believe? I mean, let's put the team stuff aside. That, first of all, is there that thirst there from the fan? I mean, is that something – if that happened, you know, if tomorrow they were to bring in a John Tavares-type player or whomever – is that something that could lift even more excitement and interest in that team in that market? Is that something that's missing when it's competing at this point with the Titans and where more of the focus is, which in college athletics in that area?
You know, I mean, we've seen that especially when they brought in Peter Forsberg several years ago, and even before that when they signed Paul Kariya, that was kind of a turning point in Predator history when they signed him. I mean, the town went crazy. They actually had somebody that they heard of before that they'd come up through the organization and wasn't a homegrown player. That was the first big free agent signing that they had. And, and then they brought in Forsberg at the end of the year for the run. The team at that point never really gelled with him on it. In the playoffs, they did their one and done with him the same as they could have done without him. One of the things that is a potential, I guess, is Alexander Radulov coming back next year. I mean, he's one of the – it turned out to be one of the top players in the KHL. And, you know, I look at when he was here before and look at the videos on the internet now of games he's playing over there. I mean, he's obviously bigger, more skilled, and, a better player than he was. But, you bring him in over here, and, you know, I watch some of the stuff he does in the KHL. If he does that here, you know, Trotz is going to be all over. I mean, he's going to have to play defense. That was one of my concerns earlier with Kostichin when they brought him in here. But Kostichin seems to like to play defense. He's good on the penalty kill. He can play a two-way game. And when Radulov was here before, all he wanted to do was shoot and score. Didn't want to play defense. And, he stayed in Trotz's doghouse as much as he was out of it. And, for the right player, if they did bring in, you throw Alexander Ovechkin or Sidney Crosby or somebody like that in there, I mean, obviously you're going to sell tickets and people are going to be excited. But, just bringing in a big name to bring in a big name, I don't think that would do it. Right now, people are probably as thrilled about Shea Weber being who he is and his standing as team captain as as anyone else that they've had in Nashville. Oddly enough, probably the second most popular player beyond Shea Weber, and a year ago would have been the most popular player, Jordan Tutu. Yeah, go figure. It's certainly not based on, you know, his all-around skill on the ice. You know, it's just based on his reputation and, you know, kind of the way he is. So, you know, it may be a little different than other markets. I mean, hockey is, you know, fairly well below pro football and college football, and it's kind of a niche sport, even though it is growing. And, you know, most of the people that go to the games, you know, that attend regularly are fans and do appreciate the type of hockey the Predators play. The ones that are just coming to the game, a lot of them, you know, Wayne Gretzky could show up, and they may or may not even know who that is. I mean, it's, you know, it's not an area that a lot of the people have ever seen a hockey game before. Most people, when they go, they enjoy it, and they'll go back. But it's not something they hear a whole lot about. They don't hear a lot about it on talk radio, the local stations, or football 24/7 all year long. So, you know, I mean, a big name in a market like Chicago or, you know, Philadelphia, someplace like that, is going to sell a whole lot more tickets than a big name here would, I think, is probably the short answer.
You know, I want to on Radulov. Is there too much? You know, obviously he leaves. He gets a big contract offer from the KHL, and he goes over there, walks out on his Nashville Predators contract, which is still existing. And then when, you know, I mean, he said that he will come back to the NHL. When he does make that move, is he welcome back by the Nashville Predators, or is there too much resentment there?
You know, it's really hard to say. I mean, every time there's any type of public forum or open questions, you know, David Paul, they ask him, and, you know, he says, well, I talked to him last week. I talked to him at the World Championship. You know, I talked to him here, there, the Olympics, wherever. And, you know, there always seems to be interest in bringing him back. I think that he would pretty much have to come into that locker room, you know, not as a star player from the KHL, but, you know, as the player that was here before that's 3 years more mature and, you know, coming with his hat in his hand. And, you know, there would have to be some healing in that room. I mean, they obviously would like to see a skill, but they don't, you know, want a disruptive force. And, you know, it's going to be real interesting to see what happens this next offseason, whether or not he stays in Russia or whether or not he does come back, or whether the Preds even trade his rights to another team before he would even come back.
In the time that we have left with you, I want to hit on a few more things, and let's start out with a couple of players. First of all, Shea Weber. In my opinion, definitely top three, top five, at the very least, defensemen in the Western Conference. You know, I mean, it's Shea Weber, Drew Doughty, Duncan Keith, these are guys that raise their level of awareness around hockey in their performance for Team Canada at the Olympics. Talk about Shea Weber a little bit. I mean, what are the, you know, the traits about him, aspects of his game that maybe people outside of Nashville that don't see him play every night may not pick up on? What makes Shea Weber such a great defenseman?
I think probably just intensity. I mean, every time he steps on the ice, he's focused and he, you know, gives 100% and expects those around him to give 100%. You know, there's times that at practice, if, you know, somebody's not doing something right or is fooling around, you know, he'll call them out on it. I mean, this was before he was captain. It's just, you know, he's focused and he's intense and he wants to win. I mean, he wants to win worse than anything else. And puts it on the line every night. And, you know, it comes out in different ways. A couple of years ago, you know, he had a streak going where I think Bielak was out and Tutu may have been out, and the team's getting roughed up a little bit, and he took things into his own hand, and he had fights three nights in a row and just absolutely pummeled the people that he's fighting against. I mean, Lee in Los Angeles or in Anaheim, you know, has not been the same since. I mean, and that was from Jay Weber's fist, not even a slap shot. They, it was, you know, just a brutal beating. And, you know, I mean, that's just kind of the intensity level he's got. You know, I mean, I thought the Predators asked him to tone it back after that because they didn't want him breaking a hand or something, out pounding on somebody. But, you know, I mean, he could be, you know, he could be the biggest thug in the league if that was his role. But it's not, you know, I mean, it's out there leading the team and, you know, slamming in slap shots from the blue line every night. So, you know, I mean, in the locker room, he's, you know, very nice guy, but he's still intense. I mean, after a loss, you know, I mean, he will have sweat coming off of him. You know, he doesn't get over it. He doesn't walk in the locker room and blow it off. Looking back at Arnott, and comparing Arnott as captain and Weber as captain, you know, Arnott could be off the ice 5 minutes and being given, you know, given all the right answers and everything about, you know, we'll have to come back out and do it again tomorrow night, you know, this, that, and the other. And say Weber still has the intensity after a loss in the locker room and really has to, you know, really focus on not, you know, getting overbearing or real emotional and you know, probably saying something he shouldn't say, but, you know, he's very disciplined. He's not going to do something like that, but you can just see it in him that, you know, he takes a loss hard. And so, you know, really that intensity that he has is probably the one thing that's carried him as far as it has.
His partner, Ryan Suter in Chicago, as I mentioned before, Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, and Chicago's blessed with a terrific first tandem, and Brent Seabrook's had Seabrook's a slow starter. I don't think you're going to see the best Brent Seabrook you've ever seen tomorrow night at the United Center. But and Duncan Keith isn't playing particularly well right now to start the season either. But they are a great tandem, one of, if not the best in the league. Right there with them, really, is Ryan Suter and Shea Weber. I mean, how important is Suter to Shea Weber, or is it the other way around? Because, you know, with Weber getting so much attention last year, now some of that attention, that spotlight, is, you know, shifting over to Ryan Suter. I think Ryan Suter's poised for a breakout year. Talk about Suter a little bit and how much he means to that tandem.
The one thing that that you don't really get to see a lot is the two of them playing separately. And it was really neat the first day that, that they had kind of a round-robin scrimmage on at training camp. And Ryan Suter and Weber were on different teams. And you really saw a different side of Suter because he was the leader on the ice. I mean, he was pretty much a clone of Weber. And taking charge and helping some of the younger players. And that's not something you see when they're paired together. After that game, I asked Trotz whether or not, you know, this was something we'd see if he would think about splitting them up this year and putting them on different lines just to kind of spread it around to be able to have these two guys on the ice for the better part of the game, having one of them out there. And he said in certain situations that that he would if he got up against a team that had two or three very, very deep scoring lines, he might look at something like that. But Ryan Suter over the summer, I think probably from the Olympic experience and onward, really seems to have matured and seems to have taken his confidence to a new level. And like you said, I think this year will be a breakout year for him. I don't know whether it'll be offensively or whether it'll just be an improvement on defense. But he is somewhat overshadowed by Weber. I think the Olympic experience last year probably brought him more notoriety than he had had before that. But he's a top 10, top 15 defensive player in the league or the Western Conference, I would imagine. But most people don't recognize that just from because he is a little bit overshadowed.
Also, that I don't think something that doesn't get recognized on the Predators enough is, you know, a guy, you talk about Arnett, who never realized his full potential, David Legault. You know, again, you talk about, I mean, these unrealistic expectations that are put on these players sometimes, and they don't reach them, and because they don't reach what you projected them as, or, you know, scouting bureaus projected them as a 17, 16, 18-year-old kid, you people get negative on them. I find it fascinating that in all these years that David Legault has managed to stick with the Predators, basically for that. A lot of times when you see players that don't realize their potential, or, you know, a guy who's drafted where David Legault was drafted and doesn't really become a first-line center and the leader offensively and all around on the team, sometimes you see franchises give up on those players. First part of the question, why has the Nashville Predators, why is David Poile stuck with Legault? And secondly, talk about the impact that David Legault has on his team. And I think Blackhawks fans may have realized that if they were paying attention close enough, how good he is defensively and what he means to the Predator way that you spoke about with Barry Trotz, and how he – he flips his lines and really how much the David Legault means to the Predators, two-way game.
It depends on you, who you ask. If you ask the fans, he's not particularly liked. He's got two strikes against him. Basically, he was being picked second overall after Vinny LeCavalier. People expected to see the second coming of Mario Lemieux or something like that. And
Mike Madonna, because of, geographical location, but yeah.
And, that didn't happen. And then the other thing is, a couple of years ago when they were trying to lock up some contracts, they overpaid him, they overpaid Erat and signed him for long-term deals. So now they see him as a $4 million-plus player out there that's, playing defense. And, not getting a lot of goals. And, last year during the playoffs, he played great. Down the stretch, he played great. He had a baby in December, his wife did, and he went on a roll there and knocked out a bunch of goals, played real well for about a month. He kind of comes and goes. But the one thing that doesn't come and go, comes and goes offensively, the one thing that doesn't come and go is his defense. The guy is fast. You're talking about Lombardi being fast. Legault is probably as fast as Lombardi, and two of the faster people in the whole league. And he's a very important part to the team of getting out there and going up against the top lines on the other team. Causing problems for them, getting in the way, and just trying to play good solid defense. And that's not something fans want to see, especially if he's a top paid player or a top draft choice. So, he's kind of in a no-win situation, but the organization knows his value. The organization knows now with the contract he's got that they better get the most they can out of him because he's not going anywhere. So, you just kind of have to appreciate him for what it is. You have to, put aside what he's making and everything else and just enjoy the game and enjoy what he contributes. He's not a fan favorite by any means.
Different situation, but a lot similar, very similar to the situation here in Chicago with Brian Campbell. Brian Campbell, the Blackhawks overpaid for him because that's what you do in free agency, but it was an essential part of the team that they had to bring in, and, they overpaid him, but that's not his fault. But he's still, very important to this team, and Nashville saw it last year. They saw the Blackhawks without Brian Campbell, and then they saw the Blackhawks with Brian Campbell, and it was a difference. And a couple more, just two more quick things before we let you go, buddy, and thanks again for joining us. We had so much to get to. We didn't really get to it all. But real quickly, there's one thing about this Predators team, a lot of expectations. I guess this will be a two-part question. A lot of expectations. I think that there's this general consensus, really. I think if you look at every single, not every single, but pretty much everybody's preseason prognostications, there's always that that asterisk, you know, when they talk about the Nashville Predators, they just assume just because they're going to make the playoffs, just because you assume that a Barry Trotz coach team is going to make it. Okay, I think they're going to make it, but I think they're going to make it because they're a decent enough team to make it. Let's say they don't. Let's say they struggle in mediocrity through February. Is Barry Trotz, does he have enough rope with this organization, with David Poile, to last through that? Or being 0-5 in the postseason, you know, in his tenure there and in the entire existence of the Predators, if they lose again, if he goes 0-6 in the first round, will he be dismissed?
No. No, he won't be.
That relationship is that strong that, you know, he won't be looked at too as a scapegoat under almost any circumstances.
I don't think so. I mean, there's been opportunities in the past that didn't happen. It started the year last year when they started off 2-6-1 or whatever it was, and things were just totally falling apart for him there. There was no panic. I mean, Trotz was calm in the post games. David Poile was giving him his full support. And at the time, I kind of thought that it might be a little bit of lip service and that, you know, behind the scenes, that, you know, it might not be quite as rosy as it seemed. But as time went on, I realized that it was. And, I mean, that it wasn't lip service and that's just the way it was. And, you know, I don't really know what it would take. I mean, if there's a lot of injuries or something like that and the Preds don't play well, they're not going to blame it on Trotz. If, you know, if the team stays healthy and, you know, totally tanks it for, you know, 20 games, goes, you know, 4-16 or something like that, you know, something to that extent, you know, I think the team would look and try to get to the root cause of it, and it might not even be, might not even point the finger at Trotz then, but I think it would have to take, you know, something of a catastrophic meltdown with a healthy team to see him do anything with him anytime soon.
Secondly, if there's one thing about the Predators that if Buddy Oakes had the power to do this, there's one thing about the Predators that you could improve, you know, with the idea of getting out of the first round and being a team like the Carolina Hurricanes, that sort of makes that run and finally gets to that Stanley Cup final. What would that one aspect of the team that you could improve be?
It would have to be special teams. In the past, before last year, Nashville was always a top 10 penalty killing team. They lost Vern Fiddler, Scotty Nickel, and a couple other guys that were just really crucial to the penalty kill. Before last season, and they paid for it. They fell down into the 20s in the ranking. This year, I think the penalty kill is improved. I think they're playing a little bit better as a team on the penalty kill. But the main thing is the power play. I mean, we've been ranked in the 20s forever, and so much of that has been that the movement has not been good. They've tried to make one more pretty pass that gets intercepted or batted away. This year, Barry Trotz has taken over the power play, and he's admitted that, you know, it's not perfect. It's still a work in progress, and then it's going to get better. I mean, it was funny, Saturday night in the post game, he said, you know, went out of the power play. He said the first power play, and, you know, he kind of made a funny face and said it was really ugly, and then, you know, he said we built on it each time after that, and they actually did score a power play goal. But he's taken ownership of that and is getting more movement and doing things. I mean, they watched. He said that over the summer they watched every single power play and broke it down and looked at it that they had last season, and also watched some of the teams with the better power plays to see what they were doing that the Predators weren't. And he's a really determined guy, and I think that he'll probably get to the point where he wants it at some point this year. It may not be perfect, but, you know, if they can get up to the 15th rank and hang in the team someplace like that through the year, that'll be a big improvement than what we've seen lately. So that would be what I would like to see the biggest improvement on.
Are we going to see Jordan Tutu going to the front of the net on that power play this year? Is that something that we have have in store for us?
It was kind of strange the other day. Dry said that he was working with three power play lines, and so some of the people we saw out there on the power play did not look like a power play line. Tutu's got about as much opportunity as anybody when you've got 12 skaters, 12 forwards out there, and and nine of them are considered on the power play. You can't tell who's going next. I don't think you'll see Wade Belak on the power play. I think we could rule that out. Anybody else?
One real quick thing. Sort of in the news periodically over the last year, William Boots Del Baggio, in some trouble, lost the shares of the team in bankruptcy, recently reacquired by the current ownership group. Real quick, is that something that the current ownership group, are they looking for new investors? Is that something of concern to them at this point? What's the status of that?
It was something that was really standing in the way of the team being able to look for new investment and to do some things, just kind of having 25% of your team basically being owned by a court in San Francisco. It was a real hindrance. They kind of got a sweet deal on that. I think they paid $15 million for basically 26 or 27% of the shares of the team, and that was purchased from within the ownership group here. One person that's kind of been on the periphery that is, if you go to his website, he claims to be a Predator owner. He's not been approved yet, but he is in the process of buying probably 5% or less is Brett Wilson, fairly famous rich guy from Canada who also owns some other teams, minor league baseball, soccer teams, stuff like that with David Freeman, the majority owner here in town. And he's a pretty flamboyant guy, has TV shows and stuff like that in Canada. And he will probably be an owner, I would say, before the year's out. And it will be good for the team. I mean, he's a winner at everything he does and, would fit in with this ownership group. One thing they did do once all that was resolved, they brought in a new CEO and a COO from the outside, real hockey people. I mean, they've basically been shooting from the hip here within the ownership group, and they finally had the freedom to go ahead and do that once and spend a little bit more money. And brought in a guy from Tampa, brought in a guy from Dallas, and really seemed to have things headed in a little bit more better, consistent direction than they did before. So just as they tried to fill some of the gaps they've had on the ice during the offseason, they were able to do that in the front office too. So basically on the ice, they've got the strongest team, and certainly in the front office, they've got the best deal going that they've had in the whole franchise history. So, all they have to do now is just let the team do what it's supposed to do and win a few games and let the season play out.
All right, so in conclusion, what's your prediction? Where do the Nashville Predators end up when the season's all said and done?
I think in my preseason pick, I had them fifth or sixth. I think I was pretty consistent in saying that. I think that if I had to rank the Central Division, I think Detroit is going to win, and I think Chicago and Nashville at this point, I would say, would be basically in a dead heat for second in the division. I think y'all are down a little bit from last year. I'm not totally convinced that Turco is going to be your man over the long haul, especially on into the playoffs. I mean, you've got your core players back, but there's a lot of guys y'all are missing from last year that were key components. And I know that you have to be somewhat concerned about that. I think it just depends on how quickly some of the other guys you brought in and brought up from the minors can backfill and fill the roles that the Bufflins and Sobels and people like that were playing.
Yeah, we agree on a lot of that. I'm not a Marty Turco fan, and I think, aside from getting hit with a barrage of injuries, I think the Blackhawks are going to be fine. I think they'll be edged out by Detroit for the first in the Central. I've got them finishing fifth. I think the problem with the Blackhawks specifically is the lack of depth and experience on the depth that they have going into the playoffs, and I think that that's what ultimately will spell their doom in the playoffs. But one more, I guess. Predators, they get out of the first round then?
Yeah. Yeah, they will. Yeah. I said the same thing this time last year, though, so I was wrong. We almost did.
All right, buddy. Thanks again very much for joining us. A lot of great information, and hopefully we'll be able to do this sometime again in the future.
Yeah, anytime. Give me a holler, and we'll get you on our show, too, and get a rundown on the Hawks before the season's over.
All right. Thanks a lot, buddy. You have a good night.
You too. Appreciate you having me.
All right. No problem. Superstar.
Yes.
All right. We'll take about a 30-second break here, and then we'll come right back, I guess. Got a lot to talk about. Hold on.
What is slashing?
Slashing is like death, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there's a penalty for that?
Yeah. And for a trip also, like that. And
mm-hmm.
for hook, like this. And for spear, like that.
Mm-hmm.
All bad.
Bad.
You do that, you go to the box, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame,
Mm-hmm.
And then you get free.
Such a fine line between stupid and clever.
And then there's James Wisniewski, superstar.
I love him.
I just have to take a moment, right? For as long as I've been doing this, okay, whether it be on the internet or on this kind of internet over, on the radio, I have been pleading with people on James Wisniewski. I have been to... And, for a long time, I was the lone person waving the James Wisniewski is an idiot flag. And finally, I got a little bit of that redemption a couple of years ago. And, with him being in Anaheim and nearly killing Scott Niedermeyer on many occasions. And, ever since. And now, on yesterday, the guy goes and does what he did, in case you missed it. I don't know what was said, but it definitely looked like he was suggesting that Sean Avery go blow himself or someone else. Your thoughts, superstar?
We joke and I say I love him, and it was hilarious to watch. I think I probably watched a clip 50 times a day because I just couldn't get over that he actually did that on the ice. But it really truly shows you that the guy's a complete moron, that he would do that on the ice. And it's very apropos that he did it to Sean Avery, one of the guys who's notorious for trying to get under the skin of people. And obviously it worked with James Wisniewski because I don't think a rational thinking person would do that in front of God knows how many people. On national TV.
Yeah, you know what? It's not that it's not the idea that he had in his head to tell Sean Avery that. It's the gesture. I mean, a lot of things get said out there. Guys will say, we'll tell a guy verbally, I'm going to break your neck, and there's no penalty there. But once you introduce the rest of your audience to what's going on down there and something that maybe you say, like with Nick Boynton, with the throat slashing gesture, there's a reason why these guys aren't mic'd up live. When they are mic'd up, it goes through a filter, and then you get the bits and pieces that are airable. And not only is it a lewd gesture, but it's crossing a line that once you get into sexual, intimating sexual preference, and it's just, it was stupidity of the highest level. He gets 2-game suspension, and I think that's about right. The absurdity of it all is not only did he do it, but he was serving as the New York Islanders' alternate captain when he did it, which, you know, is a complete slap in the face of that organization and the rest of his teammates. And now, you know, you got a team that is, you know, has so many injuries already, and now they're going to be without a veteran defenseman, as bad as he may be. I mean, just another instance that this guy is a complete tool. Nicholas Hjalmarsson, we don't have a whole lot of time to go over this. Your thoughts on the hit last night and the subsequent 2-game suspension that will have Nicholas Hjalmarsson back in the lineup for the rematch with the Buffalo Sabres Saturday night in the United Center.
It's just retardedly stupid. As you wrote about on the thirdmanin.com, it's a play he's probably done hundreds and hundreds of times throughout his life, and easily 100 times just since he's been a blackout. And he hits the nail on the head when it's all a timing. You get to the guy the same time the puck gets there, and even though the guy can't defend himself, you don't go real high, you know, legal hit. You get there a little bit early, and it changes the total dynamics of the hit. It changes everything. And unfortunately, he got there early, and it looked really bad. The league, with everything that's going on, not only in the NHL, but the NFL, talking about concussions and hits to the head, blows to the head, you know, it's not something that is a secret that these leagues are trying to crack down on concussions. And for him to even think remotely that was a good idea is just stupid.
There's a lot that was wrong with that hit, but the essence of it, without getting long-winded and going through it all again, like you mentioned, I wrote about it on the site today, probably going to write more about it tomorrow, you know, and probably again in the Committed Indian very soon. But, you know, regardless of whether, you know, I've heard so many just really dumb things, you know. I mean, he saw, you know, speaking of Pominville, he saw Hjalmarsson coming. It's like, well, yeah, he saw him coming, but he doesn't have to worry about getting hit until he gets the puck. So, you know, if you've ever, you know, and I don't want to make it into a thing about, you know, whether you've played or not, because that's a stupid argument too. But when you're out there, there's a degree of tense, you know, tenseness or tension that your body has when you know that you are in the play and you are, you know, open and available to being hit. And then when you're not, I mean, when you're coasting or you don't have to worry about being hit, so your body isn't tense. It's not ready to absorb contact. And that was the state that Pominville was in. If Hjalmarsson gets there a half second later, then maybe Pominville isn't jarred as far as he is or as much as he is, because Pominville is at that point knowing that, okay, I'm in play now. But he wasn't in play. He didn't have the puck. And, you know, I mean, I heard people say that it's not a blindside hit. Well, how is it not a blindside hit? What angle is Hjalmarsson coming from, and what is the point of contact? The point of contact was his back, you know. And then, the thing that really bothers me when I read, well, the hit was more of a hit from the side than it was from behind. Where was the point of contact? It was in the back. So how is it more from the side than it is in the back when Jalmerson's shoulder and arm drive right into the 9 on the back of Pominville's 29 sweater? How is that not a hit from behind? It is a hit from behind. And it is a blindside hit because, yeah, Pominville looked over his shoulder to see where Hjalmarsson was, but then again, he's not ready for the contact because he doesn't have the puck yet, and he's not in play. He's not supposed to be hit. So, you know, I said 2 games would have been, you know, I expected 2 games. That's enough for me, I think. But as you alluded to, there's a whole bigger issue going on here. And we talked, this isn't selective criticism or selective speak here. We're not, you know, we talked about it when Hossa hit Dan Hamhuis in Game 4 of the Predator series. Talked about it when Campbell got hit from behind or pushed from behind in a vulnerable spot by Alexander Ovechkin. There's a lack of respect for these guys and the league, really. You know, I mean, if you're someone that's trying to defend what Hjalmarsson did or try to make up excuses as to why that wasn't a hit from behind or it wasn't a blindside hit or Pominville should have protected himself. If Pominville sees Hjalmarsson coming and says, you know what, wait a minute, that guy's going to hit me whether I have the puck or not, I'm just going to leave the puck right there. What are we saying about Pominville today? We're saying, you know, I mean, you're going to use all sorts of adjectives to describe Jason Pominville today. You know, he's Victor Stahlberg if he does that. So he has to play the puck, and he's at the mercy of Hjalmarsson's discretion, and he had bad discretion last night, and it was penalizable and it was suspendable, and he got what, you know, Hjalmarsson got what he deserved. You know, he didn't do it maliciously, and if he would have done it maliciously, the suspension would have been more and it would have been deserved. And I think I wouldn't have had a problem if they gave him 3 or 4 games or even 5 games if it meant sending a message to the rest of the league, guys, you got to have respect for one another. And as a fan or as a writer or as an observer or just a passerby, don't be selfish. You know, these are real people that go home and have to lead their lives, you know, and because, I mean, I know what the idea here is that everyone's concerned that, oh, if we, you know, we're going to take hitting out of the game. You take that hit out of the game, guys won't want to hit anymore. Don't be selfish. There's going to be hitting. You know, Hjalmarsson took that plan of action because it was going to be the easiest way for him to get the puck, and plus it was the sexier hit. He could have just gone there and tried to win the puck. Go in, you wait till Pominville gets the puck, you pin him up against the boards, and then you try to wrestle the puck from him. That's a way he could have done it. But he didn't want to do it that. He wanted to go the sexier, more flamboyant way of going in and throwing the big hit. But guess what? He took the well-being of Pominville into his own hands, and he mistimed it, and that's his fault, not Pominville's. You know, you got to, you know, don't be selfish and you know, recycle these guys like circus animals.
No, you're exactly right. And Ryan Miller, the Sabres goalie, came out and talked a lot about having respect for one another on the ice, and not only that, but that the NHL needs to change the culture. Almost they need to eventually make an example of somebody who's an offender of this and you know, say, look, guys, this isn't okay. We have to change this now before somebody gets seriously hurt. You can say thankfully, I guess, it was only a concussion because it could have been a lot worse, and we've seen a lot worse. But you got to change the culture. And with it being so early in the year, I agree. I would have no problem if the NHL came down and said, you have a 10-game suspension. Just to make an example and say, look, this isn't right. You do this, you will miss an eighth of the season.
Blackhawks have, starting tomorrow night, the Blackhawks are starting a stretch where they're going to have 7 games in 11 nights, and they've already had a pretty hectic. As mentioned before, Nashville will be playing game number 2 tomorrow night at the United Center, whereas Blackhawks are already playing game number 4. October is usually a hectic schedule for the Blackhawks. Not doing them any favors. They got Nick Leddy in the lineup, who's looked halfway decent. I'm not going to get all over Nick Leddy's case or the Blackhawks' case about Nick Leddy tonight. We'll give him... Yeah, I still don't like him. I mean, I like him. I don't like him being here, and I think it's the wrong thing to do. I think that it's, you know, the problem's compounded because now not only did you get an injury, but now you have guy out, Hjalmarsson out, tomorrow night, Friday night in Columbus, and you're looking at a bottom four of Leddy, Boynton, Scott, and Hendry. And you've already got Keith and Seabrook playing 20 minutes. They're not playing well. A bad situation. You know, if you're going to overwork Keith and Seabrook in this period of time, because, again, because you have, you know, guys that are playing, you know, too many minutes, and you have a guy, Nick Leddy, who's not entirely ready to be here. He can fit in. He's definitely fitting in, but he's not entirely ready to be here. And you have to compensate for him. And, guys, you know, things are happening out there. And who knows? Who knows who could get injured from this point? But Blackhawks in Columbus on Friday night, back home for Buffalo on Saturday. St. Louis is in town next Monday. We'll be back on the air next Tuesday night. And then the first big matchup of the year with the Vancouver Canucks a week from tomorrow night. And then in St. Louis Friday after that. But the live stream's about to end here in a second, but we'll keep going again for the archive for a couple minutes. Your thoughts on the first three games and what you've seen so far about the Blackhawks?
You know, I don't think they played bad. I think, as we've talked about it and you've chronicled many a time, even going back to last year, they won the Stanley Cup because of their depth. Because there was just too much skill, too much depth. Their third, fourth line were able to match up the second, third line because of the depth and the skill they had. And, you know, through now, I mean, the defense being fully separate, I'm getting worried about the depth. I thought the fourth line, the Skilly Stalberg line, may have been the best line on the ice against Detroit, you know, comparatively with their skill. But I thought they had an outstanding game. Skilly drew a couple penalties, had a lot of chances with that line. And I think for the Hawks, they continue to be successful, especially in the early going. That needs to continue.
Yeah, Skilly's had a good start to the season, but Skilly had a decent start to the season 2 years ago. So we need to, you know, let's see him continue that. Stahlberg's okay as long as all he has to do is use his speed. You notice him, and he's been passable. You know, there's still mistakes there, and you know, you still want to see more. And his shot is not. I mean, I stood in front of a lot of shots, and I would stand in front of his shot without a cup. I'm telling you right now. Not only do I think he doesn't know where it's going, but it's pretty much as long as I'm standing in front of the net, I think I can handle it. I think the interesting thing about the Buffalo game, and talking about that hit as it relates to that hit with Jalmerson on Pominville, the Blackhawks were having a lot of trouble keeping up in that game, and they didn't have the momentum until that penalty. Ironically, that penalty settled the Blackhawks down. They killed that 5-minute penalty, and then from that point on, I mean, the Blackhawks kind of dictated the pace of that game. Pominville being out of Buffalo's lineup is a huge loss. And, so it was ironic that hit actually probably cost Buffalo the game. Cost them Pominville for at least a few games, and it cost them that game last night at HSBC.
The other thing that I want to get to, and it is ironically part of our 9 bets that we did with Dieter, and I don't have it up in front of me, but do you, off the top of your hand, know what the Blackhawks power play percentage is?
No, I don't. Give me 2 seconds, I could figure it out, though.
If my memory serves me right, they have at least one power play goal in every game. And for the lack of Brian Campbell kind of quarterbacking the power play, I think that's a good sign. Obviously, I don't know. The percentage is probably not overly great, but...
They're seventh in the league right now. I mean, that doesn't mean much at this stage of the season, but 26.7%.
Okay. So, if you're anywhere close to that halfway through, you know, you're a rock star power play. You can do it without Brian Campbell. I'm not saying the power play is pretty, but they're finding ways to convert, which is a good sign as well.
I'll say this. I'd rather see Nick Leddy on the point of the power play regularly than see any more of Dave Bolin on that power play.
Amen.
I don't know what it is about Quenneville and Bolin, but, you know, I mean, if you're going to put Sharp back there, that's one thing, and I don't even think Sharp is best utilized back there either. There have been times when the power play has scored goals here and there with Bolin on the point, but it's never really clicked, and I don't understand it. I just don't get it. Wrapping up, last night the Blackhawks without question, won that game because they had the best player on the ice. Marian Hossa has been terrific so far, ever since the start of preseason, really. Unquestionably, like to see that continue. Of course, it is early in the season, and games, you know, it's not playoffs. The pressure's not on, so Marian Hossa has been great. I'd like to see that continue. Anything else before we get out of here?
No, I think we pretty much hit everything that was on my mind for the week. Like I said, hopefully the power play can still find ways to convert. I think this first game with Nashville is going to be very interesting. As Buddy mentioned, I think they're a lot more evenly matched than a lot of, especially New Hawk fans, like the Bulls. But I think tomorrow night will be a really interesting matchup, and we'll see. We'll see if it continues. On the goaltending front, I thought Crawford looked good, not great against Buffalo. So we'll see. Like you mentioned, with the schedule that they have, how much more playing time he gets in the next week to 2 weeks.
Yeah, I wonder if Crawford will be back in the net on Saturday night against Buffalo again. It would be interesting to see if Joe Quenneville goes with that, giving Turco starts here tomorrow night and then again in Columbus on Friday, and then go back to Crawford on Saturday. And then with four games and six nights next week, we should see Crawford at least once there, probably. I would imagine in St. Louis next Friday night on the 22nd. But we'll see. I with Turco, I like the way that he started on last Thursday night in Colorado. But as that game wore along, we saw the Marty Turco that gave us reason to believe that he wasn't the guy that the Blackhawks needed, and it wasn't any sort of an upgrade or even equal to what Antti Niemi could bring the Blackhawks last season. I'm still seeing that. There's a lot of flopping. There's too much movement there. Bad goals. He was okay. I'm not one way or another. I really don't have anything positive or negative to say about, he was fine on Saturday night, but I didn't like him on Thursday night in game one. I didn't like him at all. I mean, I liked the way he started, the way he finished that game. The first Stastny goal was brutal. That should have been a save. Speaking of brutal, Chris Stewart's two-on-one goal that Turco – I mean, Jalmerson gets back to disrupt and take away the cross-ice pass to Kyle Komiski, who was streaking with Stewart. And for whatever reason, Turco didn't know where to go, was caught in the middle, and it was – it was bad. I mean, it was like rat hockey bad. And I don't know. I am not convinced that Turco's the guy. I don't think he can win the Blackhawks a lot of games. I think they're going to have to win in spite of him. And, but we'll see. All right. Let's get out of here. We'll be back next Tuesday night. And, again, we'll be doing Tuesday nights through the end of November. May pop up with a special show here or there, but Tuesday nights through the end of November. So next Tuesday, October 19th, 8 o'clock, right back here on Blog Talk Radio / The Third Man In, and also on iTunes, the website, and wherever else you happen to pick us up. I hope you have a good week, Superstar.
You too, man.
Everything going well with married life?
Married life I don't want to say as expected, but it's going very well. It's going very well. I haven't done anything to mess that up. Made a small little glitch today, but that's for an off-the-air segment.
Wow. I've had weather off-the-air. I've had a number of small glitches myself personally in the last week. My car was broken into. Window smashed in, and I was parked downtown. I stayed, this would have been Friday night, I stayed downtown, and right down the street from you. And I go walking out to my car in the morning, and I'm like, and it's in an open air parking lot. And I'm walking out to my car, and I'm like, I see that my passenger side window is open. I'm like, how, you know, I don't drive with the windows down, like, ever. You know, I like to be at the same, you know, same room climate at all times. So I'm like, why would that window be down? It never crossed my mind that somebody walked up to my car and smashed my window and stole my car stereo and some other things. But that's indeed what happened. So.
And as you mentioned, ironically, they left my hockey equipment.
Yeah. Your hockey equipment is still in there. Although I did tell you that if you wanted to go along with it, I would have told it your all your stuff was gone so you'd buy new stuff. But you just ruined it, see?
I know. You know, whoever, you know, the douchebag who didn't do that, they probably looked at it. He was like, oh, there's got to be good stuff in there. Probably opened it up to it and was like, oh, my God. You know, I was surprised you didn't find them, you know, passed out next to your car with your car stereo in your hand. Could have caught them right-handed, Block. See what I get for doing my laundry?
Yeah. All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks again to Buddy Oakes. PredsOnTheGlass.com and also BlogTalkRadio.com/PredsOnTheGlass to check out his show for all your Nashville Predator needs. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we will talk to you next Tuesday night. Good night, everybody.